Right. Okay, we are approaching Shabbat for Yakel, where Moshe gathers the Jewish people together to tell them about the building of the Mishkan, about the building of the sanctuary, and also he tells them about the importance of Shabbat, that they have to keep Shabbat. And so this juxtaposition of Shabbat with the building of the sanctuary is taken by the sages as indicating something about the nature of Shabbat. Shabbat means not doing the things that go into making the sanctuary. So when one learns the laws of Shabbat in the Mishnah and the Talmud, and hence in the Code of Law, they are divided into 39 categories of work, which I've given you a list, which I just pulled off the computer for convenience, a list of those 39 categories of work, which are considered to be the categories of work which went into building the Mishkan. That was how the sanctuary was made. Those kinds of work went into building the sanctuary, and that's what we're not allowed to do on Shabbat. The Talmud sometimes discusses very precisely exactly how they did it and how they didn't do it in the sanctuary in relation to exactly defining what the laws are in our daily lives, whether something's permitted or forbidden on Shabbat. So this is the theme of this discourse, which is not edited by the Rebbe, it's a transcript, but it's come out in the Dvar Malchut this week, and in fact a few years ago we did study this in this group, and it's even on the web, but I thought that I usually try to take something else. But I thought, since it came out in the Dvar Malchut, and we have this pointed text, usually you can't get a pointed text of the Ma'amarim, of the discourses, with a basic commentary around the side. So I thought we'd do this again. And it was originally said in 1954, which was that year. It was Mevorachim HaChodesh of Adar Sheni, which this year it's not. Mevorachim HaChodesh will be next Shabbat, not this Shabbat, not this coming Shabbat. So let's just have a look at the text of the Chumash. V'yakhel Moshe et kol adat b'nei Yisrael. Moses gathered, that's the key word here, he gathered together the whole community of the Jewish people. And now, one question is when this gathering took place. And the way the sages explain it, Moshe went up the mountain. First of all, there was the giving of the Ten Commandments, and which was a few weeks ago, Parshat Yitro. After the Ten Commandments, Moshe went up the mountain, remained on the mountain 40 days. He came down the mountain, and at the end of that 40 days, and discovered that they had made the golden calf. So then he broke the tablets of the law. He stayed a day in the camp of the Israelites, and then he went back up the mountain for another 40 days. In those other 40 days, he pleaded with God to forgive the Jewish people, which we had in last week's Sedra, Ki Tissa. Then he came down again, and also very briefly, and then he went up again for another 40 days, and that's when he made the second tablets. And on Yom Kippur he came down, and the day which turns out to be Yom Kippur, the 10th of Tishri, he came down again finally with the second tablets, and that was a day of forgiveness for the Jewish people.
How many days was it between the golden calf and Yom Kippur?
120 days on the mountain. For the 17th of Tammuz was the day of the golden calf, and 10th of Tishri is Yom Kippur, is the day of the second tablets being given. Moses coming down with the second tablets. Now this this day that he came down with the second tablets, that was a tremendous day of forgiveness, a very special spiritual day. And the account that we have over here, that Moses gathered the people, that's the next day. So it's the day after Yom Kippur. It's the day after everyone appreciates that God has basically forgiven them for the golden calf, and they've got the second tablets, and the whole project's going to go on, as it were. So this is now a crucial moment. This is a crucial moment, gathering the Jewish people together at this point. Vayakel Moshe et kol adat b'nei Yisrael. Moses gathered the whole community of the Jewish people, vayom aleim, and he said to them, Eile hadvarim asher tziva Hashem lasot otam. These are the things which God commanded us to do, or to be done. Sheshit yamim te'aseh melacha. 6 days work should be done. Uvayom ha-shvi yelachem kodesh. And the seventh day should be holy. Shabbat Shabbaton Lashem. A Sabbath of Sabbaths to God. Kol ha-oseh bo melacha yumat. Anyone who works on the Sabbath should be put to death. Lo tavaru esh b'chol moshvotechem b'yom ha-shabbat. Don't pass fire in all your dwellings on the all your habitations on the day of Shabbat. And then he goes on to tell them the next verses about taking all the different things that have to be used for the making of the sanctuary. The sanctuary was already described when Moshe was on Mount Sinai. Straight after Moses went up Mount Sinai, we have the Sedra Mishpatim, which gives basic laws that he was being taught, and Truma and Tetzaveh, which give a description of the sanctuary. But here, he's actually telling people to do it. So, the description of the sanctuary we had before was, as it were, in heaven. It's Moses on Mount Sinai, being told by God about the sanctuary. Now, we have it as a practical reality, making it, Moses telling the people to make it, and they actually make it. So, that introduces the discourse. And we will try to open the door to the discourse with the melody of the discourse. Well, there's a discussion by the sages what this, what the significance of this line. It literally means don't pass fire, don't light a fire.
Is that talking about like any specific
malacha? Well, so then there's a view that the reason why this is singled out is to tell you that each malacha, each kind of work, is separate from the other kind. So if a person did, so you see the way the sages define the work on Shabbat, is 39 categories of work. So if someone did three categories of work, they would have to bring three offerings. So if they plowed the field, and they lit a fire, and they baked something, or they wrote something, so then you've got three different categories of work: plowing, baking something, and writing something. And so they would have to bring three offerings if they did that by mistake. So that's one explanation why it comes, that line is there. O yom ba ya ya ba yom o ya ya ram ba ram yom ba bo ya ba ma ya ya ba yom ba bo ha ya ram ba ha ya ram Oh, yeah, 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 Vayakel Moshe et kol adat b'nei Yisrael. Moses gathered the whole community of the Jewish people. Vayom alem, and he said to them, Eila dvarim asher tziva Hashem la'asot otam. These are the things God has commanded to do. Sheish yitayamim te'aseh melacha. 6 days work should be done over Yom HaShvi'i, etc. And on the seventh day, Shabbat Shabbaton, it should be a Sabbath of Sabbaths. Umamshich b'katuv, and then it continues, Vayom HaMeshel, Kol Adat B'nei Yisrael, Moses said to the whole community of the Jewish people, them are saying, Zeh Adavah Shetziv Hashem, this is what God has commanded, Shezeh Atzivui B'inyan HaMishkan U'melechet HaMishkan. And that is the command of the building of the sanctuary and all the work that goes into the sanctuary, and Viduim Hadiyukim B'zeh, and it's known the various questions which are asked about this. Now, this is a long discourse, and I propose that we miss out the rest of this first chapter because he's going into all kinds of questions about this text. And it's like very much a sort of a shut, a literal analysis of the text and of that text in the Torah about Moses gathering the people and the command to build the sanctuary and how it all fits together. So I propose that we just miss that out, that there are a number of questions about that text, but we go on to chapter 2. Which is on the next page, Beit. Vayuvan kolze, and this will all be understood. It would take about an hour to explain exactly all the questions. But the basic thing is, that we can ask straight away, you know, the juxtaposition of Shabbat with the making of the Mishkan and the whole concept there. The whole theme of Shabbat. For Yuvan Kolzeh, and this can all be understood, Behektim Tchila, by first of all considering Klalut Inyan Alamatet Melachot, the general idea of the 39 categories of work which go into Shabbat. Now, so here we are exploring what does it mean work? What are we doing in this world? And what does it mean that we work? Why work? Many people do ask that question.
What does work mean? What does the name work mean?
Well, it's what the name works mean. What does the activity work mean? What's being achieved when people work? It's an intriguing situation. You know, people, Nicole, workaholic Nicole, yes, smiling at this question.
Rabbi, can you imagine if we did not work? What would it be if we did not work?
We'd have other questions then.
Yeah, we've got to do something.
Look, there's a basic existential question. Why are we alive? Oh. So given that there's a question, why are we alive? You know, then we can say, you know, why do we work? And if we didn't work, we would have a question. Why don't we work? But here it's an analysis of work. And basically that's what the discourse is about. An analysis of what work is in... what might seem like very straightforward terms, and then linking that to the Sfirot and Kabbalistic levels, some kind of like spiritual transformations. Dehine, so this is line 13 on this column. Dehine in Yana Melacha, the concept of work, is to complete, to fulfill the need of a person. A person needs something. So in order to fulfill that need, he works in order to get the thing he needs. Demitzad zeshu tzarich leize davar, because on account of the fact that he needs something, Lachenu oset hamelacha. Because of that, he does the work. V'cheivan sheklalut tzolchei adam, and since the general needs of a human being, nechlakim l'shlosha dvarim, can be divided into three areas. Sheheim mazon, levush ubayit. Food, clothing, and one's home, somewhere to live. Food to eat, clothing to wear, someone to live. Those are the basic needs of a person. Lachin gam lametet hamlachot, therefore the 39 kinds of work, she'inyanam lahashlim et tzorchei adam, which are focused on fulfilling the needs of a person, nechlakim gankim b'shalosh plugot elu, in these three divisions. Now, if you look at the list of avmlachot that I gave you, which was from the web, you'll see that the initial ones are all about planting. Planting, in fact, it's up to like making bread. Tana de Tana Sidura de Pat Naka. This is what it says in the Gemara when it's talking about, there's a Mishnah which goes through a list of all the 39 Avmelachon in Masechet Shabbat, Tractate Shabbat. And the Gemara says, you know what, this Mishnah is first of all giving the way in which you make bread. Plowing, sowing the seeds, then reaping, and so on, until and grinding, you know, like all the different activities, winnowing, grinding, kneading, it's making bread. Heima melachot b'mazon. Those are the categories of work relating to food. Toveh v'oreg, spinning and weaving, heimamla and so on, heimamlachot bilavush. Those are the categories of work relating to clothing. And then later on you have boneh v'soter, building and pulling something down in order to build, chuli heimamlachot babay. Those are the categories of work relating to the house. So there's food, clothing, and a house. Somewhere to live. Ubeo inyan, and the explanation of this is the hine, behold, hamazon inyanosh nichnas bepnimiut ba'adam. Food is something we eat, we take it inside ourselves. It goes inside the person. What is the effect of food? On its most basic spiritual level, the effect of food is umakasher et hanefesh im aguf. It joins the soul to the body. Very interesting way of looking at it. That's what food does. Food joins the soul to the body. If God forbid a person doesn't have any food, we're on line 23 now. If God forbid a person doesn't have any food, God forbid, they die. Then what does that mean, they die? It means the connection between the soul and the body is broken. The soul departs from the body.
Isn't it the other way around? That it's the body which is connected to the soul. It's not the soul which needs something to eat, it's the body which needs something to eat.
That's a very interesting thing.
I mean,
you see, the point is, it's almost as if the soul is, it's trying to be in another world. The soul has been schlepped down into the body. It's been dragged down into this world, and it's now in the body. So now the thing is trying to keep it here. So by eating, you're absolutely right, obviously. The food that we eat, the effect that we see from the food, the immediate effect, we see it's something that has to do with the body. And, you know, you can say the soul is affected by the Torah that we study, or if a person does good things or bad things, you know, God forbid, that would affect the soul. Whereas eating is something, you know, vitamins, it's healthy for the body. But the essential concept of life, that the person's alive, and the person needs to eat in order to remain alive. So that life is the way in which the body becomes a kind of a vessel for the soul. And if the body ceases to be a vessel for the soul, then the soul slips away. That's In fact, the next few lines address this point that you made, Simcha. So that's line 23. V'hainu, this means the imeyot, even though shebavadai, certainly iev shalomah, it's impossible to say shanefesh mekabelet chayut me'amazon, the soul receives life from the food. It's like you said, it's the body that receives life from the food. Mikol makom, nonetheless, keivan she'iyav shalom blikli, since it's impossible to have the radiance without the vessel. If there's no vessel, the radiance won't dwell in the vessel. It can't be there. And if there's, so that means you need the food to make the body fit as a vessel to receive the radiance of the soul. And similarly, the soul can't do what it needs to do in this world without the body.
What does it need to do in this world?
It needs to transform the world.
And it can't do it without the body after?
Well, that's the thing. You see, the body is the means whereby the soul achieves this in the world. And what it's doing, it's making the world into a holy place. And that holiness starts with the clothing of the person, and then with the house of the person, and with the whole environment that the person creates. And what this really focuses on is the sanctuary, because there's a sense in which what we're doing is making the sanctuary, and we're making the world into a sanctuary, into a mishkan. And that's something that the soul needs, the soul has the task to complete. And it needs the body in order to complete it. Because you could imagine the sanctuary in a spiritual realm. And then you wouldn't have to have human beings in physical bodies. We could just be spiritual souls in the sanctuary in a spiritual realm. But that's not enough. The goal of creation was that there would be a lower realm, like ours here, where there are physical people in physical bodies. And here we would make the sanctuary. Here we would make the dwelling of God in the world. And in order to do that, the soul needs a body in order to have. So, whatever the soul might be able to achieve without a body, these real tangible effects on existence need a body in order to do it. And that's why what our body does is absolutely crucial. You see, the confrontation that there is for Judaism from many avenues of philosophical or spiritual thought is the question, why is it so preoccupied with so many practicalities? Food has to be kosher, you know. So that means you can't eat this, you can't eat that, you have to do it this way, you have to do it that way. What does it matter? Food is just food. I'm a spiritual person, what do I care about food? You know, you could imagine such a position. And on many other levels of life, you know, don't take it so seriously, it's just... Whereas the real things in life are spiritual goals, spiritual experience. Whereas Jewish teaching says, yes, spiritual things are very important, but they connect with the physical, the tangible, and it's living on that tangible level, that physical level, which is really what we've come here into the world to do. And it's while we're living in this tangible way, in this physical way, with our physical body, that we are making the world into a dwelling for the divine. which is our core task. So that means making the world into some kind of sacred camp around the sanctuary. You've got the sanctuary in the middle, and around the sanctuary is the camp, the sacred camp. And that's what we're trying to do, make that sacred camp, which ultimately should include the whole world. The whole world should be that sacred camp in some. So the soul needs the body. So line 27, this is the effect of food. It strengthens the body, so that it should be a vessel to the soul. So that's simcha, that's the answer to your question. The idea is that the food works on the body, and the effect of the food is it makes the body healthy so that it's a vessel to the soul. Sha'az, line 28, Sha'az mitkasheret ha-nefesh im ha-guf, then the soul connects with the body. Uvemelach nimshach tosfot chayut gam ba-nefesh. Automatically, this means that extra life force is drawn into the soul. Kevin shadafka al yedei ha-guf, yichola ha-nefesh lifor poloteha, because it's specifically through the body that the soul can do what it has to do. V'hine, and behold, kol zehu b'mazon. Now we go on to page Zayin. B'mazon shenichnas, all this is through food, shenichnas b'pnimiyut ha'adam, which goes into the inwardness of the person. We're now on page Zayin, the first line of the page. All this is the food that goes into the inwardness of the person. V'na said, dam uvasa kitzahor, becomes blood and flesh, in other words, like his own flesh. In other words, the food is transformed into the person's body. Becomes part of his body. Okay, so that's food. So there are three dimensions that a person needs, if we put it in the most basic level. Food, clothing, and a house, somewhere to live. So now we come to clothing. Omnam, however, inyan halavush, the idea of garments. Hare lo zubil vad she'enu nichnas v'pnimiyut ha'adam. Garments do not enter the inwardness of the person. Garments are superficial. They're clothes we wear outside. The garments are out on the outer part of the person, and they surround the person. Even though this garment is outside the person surrounding him, mikol makom, nonetheless, harehu magen al adam. The garment protects the person. Shemegen alav michom u'mikshamim. It protects him from the heat, protects him from the rain. Okay, that's a simple practical aspect of garments. Now, when people buy garments, or someone's deciding what should they wear today, they're looking for something a bit more than just a question of being protected from the rain or the cold. And so we have another concept here, an interesting and important concept. Vagam, that's in line 4, 6. Vagam poel bo yofi. The garment affects within the person beauty. Kamaima Rabbeinu Zal, as the sages put it, the name of one of the sages, Dekari le lemani mechabdusi. He called his clothes the things which honored him. Because by wearing the clothes, the person is recognized as a person to be honored, as someone who is very spiritual, as someone who is very beautiful in their behavior, in various qualities. Beauty is part of the whole goal. In this discourse, beauty is mentioned both as regards clothes and as regards the house. So beauty is something which is really an expression of something spiritual in the world. Yofi, beauty, relates to the Sphira Malchut, to the attribute kingship. And when the radiance of that Shekhinah is revealed in the world, That is what we call beauty. And the clothes of a person express the beauty of the person. Whether it's a man or a woman, it's the clothing which expresses who the person is, and it's bringing out a deep quality which is the beauty of the person. And it's interesting that in traditional Judaism, clothes of men are very significant. You know, especially the Shabbat clothing with long black garb and the whole idea of the way people dress, the way people look, is something significant in traditional Jewish thought. So that's clothing. Achinin abayit. But then it comes to the third quality, the house. Humi b'chutz legamle la'adam. It's completely outside the person. V'hu makif yoter rachok. It's surrounding the person, but it's a further, it's a far surrounding. So, ach gam bayit magen al adam, but the house also protects the person. Shabaytu machse mizerem imumata. The house is a shelter from the rain and the rain. The gam pol boyofi also achieves beauty for the person. Kumoshu katuv, as it says, tiferet adam l'shevet bayit. It's the beauty of a person to dwell in a house. Now, the way that I understand that is that if you imagine the way that a person lives in a home, like this lovely home that David and Nicole and Akiva and Shira are sharing with us, that's a very beautiful thing. You see, a home expresses the people who live in a home. The people who live in a home, they are concerned that there should be this picture on the wall and that thing on the mantelpiece, whatever it might be. There is a way in which the home is expressing the inwardness of the people who are there. And it's really expressing the beauty of the person. Because the home is expressing what is the inwardness, and it's expressing it in such a way that it's something that we call beautiful. Do you want to leave the 39 Alf Melachos? Do you need it? Yeah. What the discourse is talking about is the connection between Shabbat and the making of the sanctuary. Because this week's Sedra talks about the making of the sanctuary, but the first thing Moses tells them is about Shabbat. So on Shabbat there are 39 categories of work which one should avoid doing on Shabbat. And those categories of work basically go into making of food, making of clothes, and making somewhere to live. And those three dimensions, food, clothes, and somewhere to live, that's like the three general dimensions of working activity. Working activity is to fulfill our needs, and our general needs can be defined as food, clothing, shelter, as Kol El Chabad in Israel puts it. Food, clothing, shelter. So that's the basic needs of a human being. Oh, wait a minute. No, we're on the... we're up to the word Vehine on page Zion. Okay, fine. So Vehine, page, that's line 11. Vehine, behold, Av Shahamazonu Bepnimiyut, even though the food is inward, Ulavushubayit Hemakifim, and the clothing and the house surround the person, right? The clothing surrounds the person closely, and the house surrounds the person at a greater distance. Mikol makom, nonetheless, yesh ma'ina b'levushu bayit al hamazon. There's something more significant about the clothing in the house than there is in food. Normally, you expect that something that is inward is greater than something that is outward. There's the idea of inwardness which is usually rated higher than something superficial, something surrounding the person. But here we're looking at it in more sort of Kabbalistic terms. Vehine, av she'inyin ha'mazonu she'nichnas b'pnimiyut ha'adam. Even though the food goes inside the person, po'el kishu ha'nefesh ma'guf, and it makes the soul join with the body. If we don't eat, God forbid, then the soul doesn't remain with the body. Mikol makom, nonetheless, mashim itgale al yedei ha'mazon. What's revealed through the food, harizeh kochot hagluyim, is only the revealed powers of the person. Which can be called the lower aspect of the soul. I think at this point we're going to have to start using this blackboard. You see, there's lower and higher aspects of the soul, and so if we put it, there's nefesh, just putting it in ruach, neshama. These are the three aspects of the soul which dwell within the person, as it were. And then we have a further level, chaya. And then there is a further level yet, yechida. Now, nefesh, ruach, neshama, those are inward dimensions, you see, those are inward dimensions which are within the person. And chaya is a makif, it's surrounding the person. In some sense, it's beyond the person. Yechida is even a deeper aspect of the soul, even more beyond. But beyond doesn't mean it's not part of the person, it's a very essential part of the person. But it's not normally expressed in our normal daily life.
What is nefesh? Ruach is spirit. Neshama is soul, right?
Well,
what is nefesh in English?
You see, there aren't really English words for this. Because this is the anatomy of the soul. See, then you're going to ask, what is chaya? What is yechida? So there are no real English equivalents. In English, you just say soul. I mean, there are different words in English for soul. There's soul, spirit, you know, so which. But you know, the Eskimos have many words for snow because they live among snow, so they have a very large number of words for different kinds of snow. So for us, with our teachings from the Torah, and then from the Talmud, and then from Kabbalah, we have a whole lot of vocabulary about spiritual things. So for soul, we have nefesh is the outermost level. Nefesh is the aspect of the soul that remains most tangibly fixed in this world. Ruach is already something more spiritual. Neshama is a deeper dimension. You know, like, so even among these three, you've got one is deeper than the other. For the person's neshama to be revealed, that's something very special. And then you have even deeper dimensions. There's chaya and yechida. You see, the thing about yechida is that it's a word for soul in the feminine, meaning only one. Yechida, the only one. And the feminine yechida joins with the masculine yachid, which is God, the only one in the masculine. So that's the point where the soul is bonded to God. So that's the deepest level of the existence of the person. Now, so what it's saying here is that the food, who klil b'chinazu, it's on account of the food that this dimension is able to be expressed. So we could write over here, food. Right? So food enables, literally, if you put it in simple terms, the soul to be in the body. So what is the soul in the body? Nefesh or neshama. So that's what is there on account of food. And then, avala makifim shel nefesh, לא מתקלים על ידי המזון, but the surrounding forces of the soul, like Chaya and Yechida, they're not revealed through the food. Liot she'ein shayich behem kelim, because they haven't got a vessel. Ach halavush shehu makif, but the garment which surrounds the person, harehu magia gam lemakifim de nefesh, that reaches also something of the wider aspect of the soul. Shezehu shalavush poel yofi ba'adam, and that's the idea that the garment transmits a certain kind of beauty to the person. The inyan hayofi u'bchinat makif. Now, beauty is something in a sense surrounding. V'ahainu sheitgalut v'kishur nefesh al yedei chizuk haguf. So, one second. But the beauty is a surrounding quality. Now, that surrounding quality is achieved through clothing. It's the clothing that brings out the beauty, and the beauty in the person is something which is really, it's not just the fact that the person is there. It's something the person represents. It's some, you know, you talk about glamour, you talk about charisma. That's an inspiring figure. You know, that's a rabbi could be like a very inspiring person. So it's partly to do with the way he's dressed. It's the, you know, all these English words, you know, clothing maketh man or something. My mother always used to tell me. Now, you see, that's a very interesting point, Ruth. Although it says in Proverbs, false is grace and beauty is worthless, the Hasidic approach to that is to turn it round and say, the problem with the world today is sheker hachen. People say about false things that they are graceful. Vehevel ayofi, and they say about hevel, about vanity, that it's beautiful. Whereas really, there is beauty, and there is chen. So you can read that text at the end of Proverbs as if it's putting down the whole idea of beauty. Forget about beauty. We're not going to discuss beauty at all. Whereas in Jewish thought, beauty is somehow extremely significant. You have phrases in the Talmud like "Ein isha ela liyofi." The greatest quality of womanhood is beauty, and this is the beauty of the Shekhinah. It's the spiritual beauty which is reflected in physical beauty. Then the Talmud says that all Jewish women are very beautiful. Only poverty takes away their natural beauty. So in other words, the difficulties of life take away their natural beauty, but in fact, everyone is very beautiful. And the idea of beauty is something tangible. It's the meeting point of spiritual and physical. This is why in the Tanakh, in the Torah, very often, what does it tell you about Sarah, Rivka, the different imahot, Rachel, that they were beautiful. They were. It speaks about their beauty. It also speaks about King David as being very beautiful. Yefei Einayim. That's Adonil Yefei Einayim. King David had ginger hair and beautiful eyes. So you know, which you would say it's like the charismatic quality of King David.
I guess this beauty is not what we call today beautiful. It's something more like inner beauty or harmony. It's not having
the latest
like views. Today, it's really crazy. Everybody is going through agonies to be more beautiful, you know. So I guess it's another meaning to beauty here.
It's certainly another meaning. But I think that what people are running after when they're trying to be beautiful is just that they're running the wrong way. The real, and I'm actually trying to remember what happened when Miss Israel, was visiting America, and she came to visit the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And I can't remember. It's like a famous meeting. And the Rebbe said something to her, but I can't remember what it was. You know, like, he didn't put down. I think he told her she should use her position to spread Judaism, something like that. You know, but I don't remember whether he commented on the whole concept of. It's like a video. You can see this woman. You know, she's dressed modestly. You know, she comes to the Rebbe. She's the person who's. And the rabbi introduces her. This lady is Mrs. Israel. But it's seeing beauty as something spiritual. It's and understand that certainly the worldly way of looking at beauty is muddled. Seriously, is tragically muddled. But that doesn't take away from the real beauty. It doesn't mean that beauty doesn't exist. It's there in a most profound way, and it's there as something we're trying to create in the world, to express the atmosphere of beauty. And the interesting thing is that he spoke about in the paragraph above. It spoke about beauty with respect to clothes, where there you would say like a beautiful person, but there's also beauty with respect to the home, which is like a beautiful environment. And it's more than just the it's certainly more than the features or some other quality. Is a person fat or thin? It's an expression of the deep beauty that is really what existence is. Existence is incredibly beautiful, and that beauty should be revealed. That's and our work.
Do you think these are qualities that can be like bought with money? It's like a silly question, but clothes, food, and they're material type things, aren't they? On some level, I'm sure you can buy the best house in the world, and it can be ugly, and the best food and.
You know, it's very interesting what you're saying. You know, of course, you would think that the obvious answer to what Nigel's saying, no, money is irrelevant. But in fact, the way the discourse is going to approach this is going to discuss the relative values of food, clothing, and houses. And the fact that food, which you need all the time, is relatively cheap. And clothes are more expensive and they last quite a while. And houses are even more expensive. So money, like beauty, can be run after in the wrong way and can be thought of in the wrong way. But really money itself is the way in which we create a sacred environment. And money is part of that as well. And so everything comes together, the physical dimension of life with the spiritual dimension of life.
But what is beauty?
It's the quality.
Jewish beauty, yeah.
It's the quality of the Shekhinah, which is the indwelling of the divine, which in some way is perceived in that person or in that environment. So the person, because of their soul, something radiates from the person, which is beauty.
Against everything else. It overcomes. It's like the powerful thing, isn't it? It's a resilient, beauty's almost resilient, isn't it? It's sometimes very brave to do these things, you know, to stand up for what you believe, to do the things, to carry the yearning, to carry the.
That's a very good point.
It's a battle, usually, I think.
Yeah. That's you know, there's nothing so beautiful as someone standing up for something that's right. That's.
So So it's more a light, it's more an energy, it's
absolutely
physical features. Person, beautiful person. It's not about his physical features that are beautiful. It's about the energy, the light that...
that radiates from it.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
And the clothing helps with the light?
Well, clothing helps to express that aspect.
How?
Of the person. Because the clothing is, for example, modesty or immodesty. Modesty is much more beautiful than immodesty. Modesty is expressing something about holiness. So the clothing is part of the expression of the illumination and the life force, that the energy that the person is radiating. Yeah,
but it's more than this about clothing, isn't it? It's more than modesty.
By wearing clothes, we're expressing something. We're saying something about what we are, what we believe in, what we are living for. The clothing.
Why is it important to say it? I mean, it can stay in our inner self.
Well, that's the interesting thing. See, we are creating an environment. So the fact of people wearing clothing and then making a home which expresses what the person is. So you have a home, there are pictures on the wall. Now you look at those pictures, you immediately identify something about the people who live in this home. Yes, we can see immediately, this is a Jewish home with an interest in Hasidism. Comes straight out. And art. And nature. but you see immediately you move into a home within a short time, that home becomes a further dimension expressing you or any person. So why do we make this public expression? Why don't we just all live in identical boxes? But we don't, because we're saying something. There's at the Pesach Haggadah, it says Chacham. It's talking about the four sons. Chacham Mahu Omer, the wise son. What does he say? So there's an explanation of that. Chacham, Mahu, Omer. The wise son, what he is, that's what he says. He communicates his being. And that's an interesting aspect of the way that we exist in the world. That our most profound qualities, which we might reach through some kind of deep process within us, we find ways to share with other people. That sharing might be through painting, making paintings, or writing poems, or creating videos, or writing Torah teachings, or learning Torah teachings, and sharing them with others. All these are ways of expressing our own inner qualities. And so the home and the clothes that we wear, they too are expressions in some way.
You know people that have things destroyed, like in New Zealand or whatever, there's people having their houses destroyed, there's earthquakes, there's natural disasters. How do you feel people recover from these sort of incidents? Because you build up these possessions over your life, and then things are destroyed. Is that...
Well, I mean, that can be...
Is there something deep in it?
Well, obviously, it's a very deep thing. And, you know, when you consider, you know, rebuilding a life where things have been destroyed. And I remember I have a cousin, a third cousin, and something like that. And she was telling me was during the war, and the village where she lived in Poland had been destroyed by the Germans. Fortunately, she had been away from the village at that time, and so she came back. She saw, she was 7 years old, or 6 years old, she saw the house which they lived in, which was now a complete pile of rubble. On top of the pile of rubble, that's how she told me, was the shepherd, the two-handled flask for pouring water on one's hands. So on top of the whole pile was this shepherd that she remembered. And that was her six-year-old memory of her home demolished. You know, I mean, and then going through many other things. And obviously each human being, you know, lost is something very, very tragic. And then finding ways to rebuild and move on from that situation of loss to a new situation of rebuilding and of new modes of finding oneself and of finding a new kind of stability.
Tammy, just to go back to the point of the Yofi and beauty, when the Torah speaks about this in relation to people, you know, like Sarah or Rivka, whatever, or David, it's speaking in sort of physical expression terms.
Yeah.
They look like, but then it surely doesn't mean that only. It must mean it's.
It doesn't mean it only. The point about the world that the Torah is describing is usually one in which the spiritual and the physical coincide. So you have a person who is very beautiful physically, and that beauty expresses a deep inner beauty as well. Now, that is in the Torah. We can have a situation which is the opposite. Unfortunately, there can be very beautiful people who behave in the most terrible, terrible ways. I remember in a Holocaust memoir where someone says, it's a woman who wrote it many years later, and she's talking about how there's a certain capo who is a girl who looked very pretty. But she said that didn't mean that she was nice. I'd unfortunately come to distrust the pretty ones. They were often nasty. In fact, this girl was pretending to be nasty. This kappa was pretending to be nasty. And it took some time for the woman writing, who was then a girl of 16, to realize that actually she was doing something very good for her, although she was disguising it by shouting insults at her. But what she was actually doing was helping her in a very, very important way. And she suddenly realized this is what the girl was doing. And she said, "Thank you." And for a second the girl smiled at her. And then went on shouting insults. But she was giving her clothes. This kappa was giving her clothes. But she was giving her really nice, good clothes, proper shoes, so clothes that would help keep her warm and could save her life. And but she was cloaking that in insults and shouting and cursing. So in her case, the fact that she was pretty actually expressed what she really was.
So you mean to say that pretty is good?
It should be. It might not be.
Why? I don't understand. If someone is lucky enough to get the features that are considered in our age as beautiful, you know, 1,000 years ago they were not considered beautiful, but if someone is lucky enough to be born with features that are considered nowadays to be beautiful, does it mean that they are good?
I don't know how you evaluate pretty. First of all, the Gemara says, "Chein isha al baila." every husband thinks that his wife is the most beautiful woman in the world.
Is it true?
Is it true?
I believe so.
I'm not sure it's true, are you there? Okay.
I'm sure they will agree.
You should think so.
They would agree. I certainly think so. It's, so the concept is chenish al baila. Why is it that a husband thinks his wife's the most beautiful woman in the world? Because he knows his wife. No one else knows her so well. And he sees that incredible beauty. Every person is beautiful. It's a matter of seeing the beauty. You know, beauty.
People have done the most awful things. How can
you say that everybody's beautiful? Yeah, well, that's a very nice way of putting it, Nicole. You said people have done the most awful things. So how could you say they're beautiful? So in other words, the beauty is an expression of what they are. So if someone, that's God forbid, done the most horrible thing, you expect this to show in their face, and perhaps it does. You know, if you know this. Looking at characters through the features. Yeah, which is not.
So what does that say?
Well, that's talking about particular features. I mean, that's a very good point. You know, particular features or balancing of features which express different things about the inwardness of the person. I think that's what people with seichel mean when they talk about beauty. Beauty expresses something positive. I mean, if you look at if there was a Nazi in one of these war museums, I can't remember where, I remember a picture of female Nazi camp guards, like the British or whoever it was, the Russians who had liberated this camp. They got all the female guards to line up, and they took a photo of them together. I've never seen such a horrible group of people, you know. Now, whether in theory, you know, and conversely, looking on a completely different picture, every single girl who is a bride looks very beautiful, thank God. You know, at that moment, and with a little bit of this and that, everyone is beautiful. It's not.
No generalization.
But when I shop for clothes, I just shop by intuition what I like. But now I'll have to shop for a saying, you know, things that would deliver some of my views, some of my beliefs, right?
Well, why is shopping with your intuition not that? No, that's
not necessarily that. Because I never directed my attention to really choose something that will say something.
Well, who says it has to be like a conscious thing?
I think it needs to be conscious.
Why?
Otherwise, it might say the opposite.
But your intuition.
Well,
that
might be part of your character which you haven't understood yet, but aren't quite aware of.
If it were saying the opposite, and you noticed that, you wouldn't wear it.
Yeah, but it's not representing me. It's representing my values, my beliefs. It's more than me. You see? My beliefs.
It's all connected. I mean, you're making distinctions between things which are connected.
Well, I have to try it and see whether...
I think you use the word your intuition. I think your intuition is something very deep inside you. So if you're already using your intuition... This is not so different.
Yeah, I mean, you decide, I want this and I don't want that. So, this is me and that's not me.
I mean, your intuition was cultivated by your values, no? Your intuition can be cultivated somewhat by your values.
But it needs to be a conscious decision to cultivate my intuitions by my values. I think so.
I don't know. It might be automatic.
It might be, not necessarily. Mm-hmm.
I don't think you should worry.
Let's say I like red, okay? So I had a red coat and I hesitated before I bought it. And maybe now, if I think about what it delivers, I shouldn't buy a red coat.
Well.
So it's not that simple. I don't know. Okay.
Well, it looks interesting.
Shopping with the cat the last
thing. It could be a whole TV channel about that shopping. Ali, you can make a lot of money.
Could set up a shop. Chain of shops, Nigel.
KabbalahShopping.com.
Push your money.
All right.
Oh wait, someone's going to hear the idea and take it.
Don't worry.
By the name
immediately. Now actually this, if we look at line 21, the Inyan HaYofi, line 20 and then 21, Inyan HaYofi, the idea of beauty, Hu Bechinat Makif, is something surrounding. V'hainu Shit Galut V'Kishua Nefesh, the revelation and bonding of the soul, Al Yidei Chizuk HaGuf, through the strengthening of the body, Shenaase Mitzad Pulat HaMazon, Hu Inyan Pnimi, is something inward, which comes through food. That's something inward. Aval Inyan HaYofi Hu Bechinat Makif. But beauty is something surrounding and expressive, outwardly expressive. Omnam, however, gam alavush shepoel hayofi, the clothing which brings out this beauty, hari hayofi hu ba'adam, is in the person themselves. In im, you see, he puts it in Yiddish. In im, in the person themselves. V'hainu shubchinat hamakif hashayich al apnimi. It is a surrounding quality which relates to the inwardness. Shehu makif dechaya. That is the first level of surrounding of chaya. Aval hayofi vatiferes. But the beauty and the splendor, shemitzad abayit, which comes from the house, the home, that's a grander, on a grander scale. Tiferet adam lashevet bayit. The splendor of a person dwelling in a house. This beauty is not in the person so much. Liot makif harachok, it's the more distant surrounding quality. She'eno shaych el apnimi, it doesn't relate to the inwardness so much. V'hu hitgalut hamakif yechida, and that is the expression of yechida. Now, so this has been a presentation, if you like. So we've got food, clothing, and the home. And food, clothing, and the home on three different levels, which are the expression of three different dimensions of one's spiritual quality. Now, at the bottom of page Zion, this is now going to be translated into the Sfirot. I think. Ukumosu hu gam begashmit, the way it is physically, shalavushi meyotam. 1 second. Oh yeah, no, the next part of this paragraph, if we go on to page Chet, this is where he talks about these things being more expensive than each other. The way that the food is something that we need to have all the time, we can't live without food. Now it's on page Chet. We can't live without food, and we need it all the time, however it's relatively cheap, and then comes clothing which lasts longer, which is more expensive, and finally the house which lasts even longer, and is even more expensive. So that's a way in which all this It sort of made more tangible that even the economic dimension, given that the something financial is also real in terms of the spiritual source of everything. Everything has got a spiritual source. So now in section Gimel, it's going to go into the realms above. V'hinei tam hadavar shebetzolchei adam yesh mazon levushavayit, the reason why in the needs of a person there's food, clothing, and a house, and a home. Harizeh kamo b'chol davar, so as with everything, sheyesh no lamata, that there is here below, shumitzad shochsho lamala, it's because of its root above. V'cheinu b'inyin mazon levushavayit shebadam hatachton, so it is with the food, clothing, and home of the lower person, the human being. That's because of its source in higher reality. The 10 sfirot. Now the 10 divine emanations, the three qualities of mazon, food, clothing, and a home. In which way? Vahainu. That means shinyan orot bekelim shebe'ese svirot. In the 10 divine emanations, there's the idea of the vessel and the radiance within the vessel. So when we talk of the radiance being within the vessel, hu b'chinat mazon, that's like food, that the spiritual radiance is in the vessel. Ukumokein yesh gam b'chinat levushim, there are also garments. Kamaima levushin tekinat lon, as it says that you, God, created garments for the Sfirah. Now, the garments of the Sfirah are sometimes explained as the worlds. The garments are the worlds. Over here, it's got a commentary, which is something else. It gives a... Here it speaks about the garments of the Sfirah as being the source of souls. But I think that sort of complicates the issue. If we just take it, one of the comments, you see this phrase, you made garments for them, is a quote from a passage from the Tikkuni Zohar, which is in the Siddur. In the Lubavitch Siddur, it said on Erev Shabbat, I noticed that in some Sfadi Siddurim, it said every day before davening, before Mincha, in the Mumbai rite, the Indian style of prayer. So it said every day before Mincha, and it's a whole description of the Sfirah. And it talks about the Sfirot, and it says that God made garments for these Sfirot, and the garments of the Sfirot are the worlds. You see, the world, the different dimensions of worlds are the garments of the Sfirot. So it's like some kind of expression, the same way that the garment is an expression of the inner person. So the worlds are the expression of the Sfirot. And there's also the concept of a house. There are the concepts of palaces. Heichal. Palaces in these spiritual realms. For example, a very important palace that is very significant. Heichal Hanagina. The palace of melody. There's a spiritual palace of melody, and the ability to play music, to sing, to respond to music, that has to do with the relationship of the palace of melody, which is above. And so there are different dimensions in the spiritual realm. It's as if there is the, then it speaks about Heichal Moshiach, the palace where Moshiach is, the Tanaim and the Amoraim. So there are, in fact, there's a whole literature called the Heichalot literature. The which for many, many, for millennia was in manuscript rather than printed books. Now it's to a certain extent printed by academic scholars. But these, speaking of palaces and the ability to move from one realm to another spiritually.
Is this like all the poetry where like Celadon came from and things like these for us?
That's a very good point. Yes, you see, Celadon, there's the idea of the songs of the angels and different kinds of song. Now, the songs above are really saying the alphabet. And there's ordinary alphabet, and then there is large alphabet. Because in the Tanakh, there's a large alphabet. And like Aleph is the beginning of Divrei Hayamim. Adam Shet Enosh is the first line of Divrei Hayamim, Book of Chronicles. And the Aleph of Adam is big. Then the Beit of Bereshit is big in the beginning. And so on. There's a Gimel, a big Gimel, a big Dalet, and so on. A whole alphabet of big letters. There's also an alphabet of little letters. So the alphabet of big letters is expressed not by one word in the alphabetical order, but by a phrase. So Keladon al Kolamaisim, that's the beginning of that's the Aleph, then comes Bet, and so on. So, and that is a very spiritual theme, which is expressed on in the Shabbat prayers. So there, Uchamayma, if we go on to page Tet, as the saying of the sages. Now here's an interesting interpretation. Shemishacharav Beit HaMikdash, when the temple was destroyed, from then on, Ein lo laKadosh Baruch Hu ela arba amot shel halacha. God only has the four cubits of halacha. Now, this four cubits of halacha, that is the house in which the essence of godliness is revealed. So there's the four cubits of halacha, that's where God is, so to speak. That's the realm, that's the house, that's the home where God is, so that spiritual realm. V'hareya arba amot hu inyan habayit. The canal shebehem mitgala etzem. Now, this four amot is the idea of the home in which the essence is revealed. Now, in the bit that we missed out, he mentions that there is the four amot around each person. You see, there's the person themselves, then there's the clothes on the person. Then around the person are four amot, four cubits, which is like, a kind of six foot. Circle around them, and that is, you could say, a kind of like the aura around the person. It's a further dimension around the person, and it's in that is where the essence of the person really is. So okay, there's a very subtle discussion here, but I think that we should miss this out and go on to the bottom of this page, line 26. V'hine kashem. Now, kashem sheyeshno itchalkut demazon levushu bayit. Just as there is a division of food, clothing, and shelter. Mitzada kelim, as regards the vessels in spiritual realms, haynu mitzada orot kamo shem bekelim. That means because of the radiance as they are in the vessels. Kamo ken gam mitzada orot gufa. When you consider just the radiance, yeshlam gimel chinot hanal. There are also these three aspects. So, in other words, in spiritual realms, we've got. I think we should try and. You see, there's Svirot. So, this realm is Svirot. And then we have higher up what it called garments. which is there. Which are really worlds, and then there are heichalot. I'll put worlds, right? So garments is worlds, and heichalot is the home dimension. Heichalot. So that's if we would somehow connect that with the four cubits of halakha, as if the four cubits of halakha is the kind of realm, as it were, the heichal. I've never seen it expressed in this way, but it's like the heichal of the essence of godliness somehow. So there we have svirot, garments, and heichalot. Now, in order to fit into these three categories, there are also three dimensions of radiance. Shehei memale kol almin, he's now going through them just in a list. The radiance which fills the worlds. Sovev kol almin, the radiance which surrounds the worlds. V'abchinah shelemayla min memale besovev, and that aspect which is above, that which fills the worlds, and that which surrounds the worlds, which is even higher, which is like the essence. Va'inin b'zen, what this means is dehinei b'chinat. Now, if we move into page Yud on the next page, the concept of mamale kol almin. What does it mean? The radiance which fills the worlds. Now, if you study Tanya, these concepts, the radiance filling the world, the radiance surrounding the world, these are very important concepts. Hari alashon de mamale, the idea of filling the world. Atzmo moresh hui b'itkalut b'dava b'pnimiyut. It's something revealed in the inwardness of a thing. It's enclosed in that thing. That's what it means. It's filling. It's filling that. So the so over here, it's the radiance which fills the worlds. So I'm just going to call this. I'm going to put it in Hebrew. Mamale. It fills the world. So that's the radiance which is within the sefirot, like the food inside the person, the nefesh, ruach, neshama, the radiance of the soul inside the person. I actually have a question over here. Why the beauty is only seen from the clothing dimension? Why you don't have it just from the soul in the body? Why the soul in the body doesn't also have the effect of beauty? And as I'm asking you the question, I can see an answer to it. That the quality which shines out, you see, beauty is something that relates to the beholder, something that relates to the one seeing the beauty. So when we're eating food just for ourselves, that's like an inward action. But once there's something which is revealed to others, the sense of self of the person, that already is that's the way in which the person shows themselves. And one can just take it that a person can't show themselves without clothing. Clothing is an essential way in which we reveal ourselves to the world. If we're not wearing clothing, we can't be seen by anyone. So we have to be seen in clothing. That's the way that we're able to be revealed to other people. So that's the radiance of beauty which shines out. So it's something deep inside, which is then shining through.
And why in religious circles is clothing so conformist and similar and whatever?
Well, you might think that conformist clothing is actually expressing something very powerful.
But it's not expressing the individual's
sort of choice. Anybody wearing jean and t-shirts, does that express individuality?
Yeah, it does to some degree. More of a degree than people who are all saying something. I mean,
yeah, but they think each person feels
more
that
of a choice than within inside religious communities.
I don't know.
Do you disagree with that?
There's a famous little thing in a Tony Hancock film where in this film it's like a classic of the 60s. So the hero of the film is a businessman in the city, and he runs away to Paris and he becomes an artist. And you have this shot where he is there telling his friends what it's like in the city, and the camera is focused on him, and he's saying they all wear exactly the same clothes, they all wear pinstripe suits and bowler hats, and that's what they're like all the time, every single one of them, they all wear exactly the same clothes. So you've got a picture of him filling the street with his beard and turtleneck sweater, and then the camera slowly moves back, and every single person in the room has got a beard, identical beard and turtleneck sweater. You know, I think it's very, you know, the way, you know, especially for men, this sort of like standard Jewish Haredi garb, I think it's very meaningful.
I just want to point out, in response to Nigel, remember there's always a gap between like the ideal of an aesthetic and what it's trying to express and the reality of how it's expressed. And I think like in all social groups or societies, they don't always express the aesthetic as well as they could. But it doesn't mean, you know, you don't always see it to its full potential.
All right.
I'm interested. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, actually. I just wonder about the soul of great people.
I feel it's very expressive.
It should be less important. I mean, it's like,
I think it expresses the values, because the values are not individualism at all. On the contrary, it's against individualism of these people, and it definitely expresses it.
Well, I'm not sure. That's,
and if someone aspires to be a bitul, right, he can't be individualist, right?
Okay, it's a very, you know, there's an inward individualism and an outward sense of unity with the klal, with the general community. You know, you can have a sense where everyone is bonded together in a unit, and at the same time each person is unique.
Yeah, but this uniqueness is not expressed in the clothing.
That's true. Okay.
If the clothing's the easiest thing to do. I mean, you can. I think my friend, he goes to the. Don't know where all the Hasids go, in Eastern Europe or something, on Rosh Hashanah. I've forgotten the place.
Uman,
yeah. Part everyone's dressed like a Hasid, and some of them are just...
Uman is a very interesting sociological...
You wouldn't know, because
they're getting... sociological place.
And it doesn't mean a thing.
Yeah, I mean, Uman is a very... You know, Uman itself is unique as, you know, a gathering of people. But I think if you want to see the individuality of Hasidim, you look at the books on their bookshelf. Because then you see what they're reading, and that might well differ from one to the other. Okay, so there we have this idea of the radiance filling the world, and then there's the radiance which surrounds the world, and then there's an even more exalted, so if we can just... So there is Sovev Kolalmi, so there's the radiance surrounding the world, and then ultimately there is like the essence, the essence which is beyond. And basically the discourse then spells out this theme that what we are doing, if we move... you see, what we're doing in work, in the 39 categories of work, is that on each of these dimensions, we're elevating something, we're achieving something, we are harvesting, we're plowing and planting and harvesting food. We are spinning and weaving and sewing clothing. We are building a home. That's so on the physical level. And the effect of what we're doing also has spiritual dimensions as well, beyond that physical level. So it's those 39 categories of work of Shabbat is what we are doing in the world, but we take the energy from that, from the Mishkan, from the sanctuary. It's because the sanctuary is there. This becomes the crux of what it's saying here. That it's because the sanctuary is there. Then it says, V'shachanti v'tocham, I will dwell within the heart of each individual. So God then dwells in the heart of each individual. And because of that, the work that we are doing is, whether it's for food, clothing, or the home, that work is something which is having repercussions on the highest spiritual levels. Whether it's the sfirot, the garments, the worlds, the heichalot, or moving through these different kinds of radiance, the radiance which fills the world, the radiance which surrounds the world, the essence. So these are the reverberations which are taking place through the daily activities of a person. And that is what the Mishkan is all about. That is what the sanctuary is all about. And that is what our life in this world is about. Now, it actually doesn't talk about... you see the way in which it takes the idea of Shabbat here is the idea of the 6 days of work, which are like the 6,000 worlds, the 6 millennia of the existence of the world. And then we come to the Shabbat of the world. So it like moves into that sort of total eschatological dimension. It doesn't actually discuss, unless I missed it, why we don't work on Shabbat. But that comes up elsewhere in Hasidic teachings, that on Shabbat, the sanctuary is complete. That's the thing about Shabbat. When we come to Shabbat, the sanctuary is complete, so we do not have to do any of this work anymore because it's all already there. So therefore, we are transforming things in such a way and elevating things and connecting things with the divine and revealing the divine qualities and everything through our physical work and the spiritual overtones that is in that spiritual work, that are in that spiritual work, all the days of the week. And when we come to Shabbat, then the sanctuary is there. But the whole time anyway, we are taking our energy from the sanctuary, from the sanctuary, which is really the essence of the whole indwelling of the divine in the world. And then it moves on to that concept of the 6,000 years, which is like the 6 days of the week. And then comes the Shabbat Shabbaton, the day which is completely Shabbat and peace for the whole world, which is the Shabbat of the world. You know, that's even beyond the concept of Mashiach, let's say, an even further dimension. So that's the way the discourse ends up. So what this discourse means to me is a transformation of the way in which we just consider all the ordinary daily things that we do, which all fit into these categories of 39 kinds of work, that in some way it is creating this realm, whether it's food, clothing, a home, or in larger dimensions. You see, the 39 categories of work then affect all the other things we're doing. We might be writing a letter. So the writing of a letter, it comes from something which had to do with the building of the structure of the Mishkan, of the sanctuary. Because they wrote letters on the boards, so like, put Aleph next to Aleph. So they put the boards together in a particular order, and they would write on the boards. So then we could write or be typing on a computer. And so we can't do that on Shabbat. But it relates to the work that went into the making of the sanctuary in this particular dimension of it. And go on. Well, so all the work that we do is somehow part of this creative activity which is creating the indwelling of God in the world.
So if I understand right, it's not only Torah and Mitzvot that have effect on the Sefirot and upward, it's also the work we're doing.
Absolutely.
But only the work that is connected to the building of the Mishkan, of the sanctuary.
Well, in
only the 39 details of works that connected to building of the sanctuary?
Well, you see, there's another idea which isn't mentioned in this discourse. But which overlays it, is the idea of Birur Netzutzot, the idea that there are sparks in everything, and the very fact that a person is doing something, whatever it is, eating something, like eating is permitted on Shabbat, but the fact of eating something, that means there's an interchange between the spiritual energy which is in the food, which now becomes part of the person. And the person then is able to connect with God through tefillah or Torah study or doing a mitzvah. So the energy which was in the food, the nitzutzot, the sacred sparks in the food, now connect with that. So that is another way in which there is a whole interchange of energy which is taking place. So actually, what this is saying is that every single thing we do is somehow or other can be a revealing of godliness and a connecting with God of existence, of everything around them.
And it's not only deeds, it's thoughts?
Yes, yes.
And feelings? What's the third one?
Yes. Machshava dibur maaseh. So there's thought, speech and action, but feelings are also part of it. Because, for example, v'ahavta et Hashem elokecha, you should love Hashem, your God. So the power to love God, that is a feeling in the heart, which is something which can have a transformative effect on the world.
And shopping.
That's why we need
in the Kabbalah shop.
Very important.
Can't run away. That's a classic. That's a genre of today, isn't it?
Right. Okay. So we sign off from KabbalahShop.com.
Thank you.
Okay. Don't laugh. It can be
enjoyable. I know. I'm really laughing.